The Force Field is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
From Charlotte, North Carolina, for IT service providers, it's The Force Field with Rick Savoia. And now, here is your host, Rick Savoia.
Greetings, providers. Welcome to the unofficial podcast for IT service providers, The Force Field. I am your host, Rick Savoia, and during the next half hour, we'll cover the news, views, reviews, and interviews for and about the IT industry and the Force Field community. Our call-in segment is open to all listeners Saturday nights from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern. Call 407-278-5698. That's 407-278-5698. Or you can call in via Skype at Savoia Computer if you'd like to be part of the show. In our last episode, we talked with an expert on business formation, learned about the various business entities we can start, and considered both the advantages and disadvantages of choosing one form over the other. Today we'll continue our discussion with him and find out how to determine which form of business is best for your company. But first, let's take a look at what's going on elsewhere in the IT industry. Onforce released their Services Market Index for the first quarter of 2010, April 26th. According to the index, break, fix, and warranty service events dominated the platform, with PC desktop work at 29%. Installation work remained steady, accounting for nearly one-third of total work orders, indicating continued stabilization in the market, according to Onforce. The Onforce Services Market Index Q1 2010 report is available for download at www.onforce.com/OSMI/Q110. One of the most accessed and utilized areas of the IT Business Resource Directory on the Force Field portal is the National Contractor Directory. This directory is one of the most complete and comprehensive listings of national service companies for contract IT work available on the web today. We are currently updating the National Contractor Directory and checking the list for companies whose status is either unknown or may no longer be in business. We are also searching for new nationals to add to the directory. There are over 100 companies currently listed, and you can view them all when you log into the forcefield.net and click on IT Business Resource Directory in the member menu on the left sidebar. If you know of any national contractors, platforms, or service companies not listed in the directory, please email me at comments@theforcefield.net and let me know. There are a lot of remote support applications around, and no doubt some of them do a good job of connecting to your customer's PC online. You may already be using one of these tools to service one of your customers right now. The question is, how well does it work for you? If you've been listening to the Force Field for a while, you've probably heard me talking about how I use GoToAssist Express for remote support and how well it works for me. I like it because it's easy to use, it's very reliable, and it's made by Citrix, a name I know and trust. One of the best things about GoToAssist Express is that you don't have to pre-install software on your customers' machines, so you can instantly start supporting them online. Plus, with GoToAssist Express unattended support, with your customer's permission, you can even support customers when they are away from their computer. But you'll never know unless you try it. Try GoToAssist Express yourself free for 30 days. For this special offer, visit GoToAssist.com/techpodcast. That's GoToAssist.com/techpodcast. Get the free trial, try it yourself, and let me know what you think. And work smarter with GoToAssist Express. CompTIA will hold their annual breakaway event in August. CompTIA Breakaway 2010, billed as North America's premier event for the IT channel, will be held August 9th through 12th, 2010 in San Antonio, Texas. Admission is free to CompTIA members, and CompTIA is currently offering an early bird rate of $199 for non-members until May 31st, 2010. Membership to CompTIA is annual, and dues are based on organization type and membership level. For more information, contact CompTIA at www.comptia.org. And finally, PC World reports that Microsoft Internet Explorer lost 20% market share, dropping from 80% 2 years ago down to less than 60% last month. According to Net Market Share, which tracks browser usage online, Explorer has 59.9% total market share, while Mozilla Firefox has 24.59%, reflecting an increase of nearly 5% in April alone. Google Chrome came in a distant third at 6.73%. However, given Chrome's fairly recent entry into the browser market, that's not bad at all. No doubt Microsoft is concerned about this, as well they should be. Internet Explorer is still the dominant browser, although that is likely to change within the next few years. Newer, leaner products have entered the arena, and more competition may be on the way. As more users begin to surf the net with mobile devices, the browser market is likely to fragment further. But while the competition for browsers is fierce, it isn't necessarily Firefox, Chrome, or even Safari that is to blame for Internet Explorer's losses. It's Redmond. Developers and users alike have been begging Microsoft for years to follow World Wide Web Consortium standards to make both web design and browsing consistent and a seamless experience. Microsoft refused, intent on making the web conform to their standards and the features and frailties of their browser. The other browsers didn't really do anything to change the game. They simply came along and gave users and developers what they wanted: standards compliance, and interoperability. It wasn't until late in the game that Microsoft finally came to the table, reluctantly, I might add, and began to work the compliance in. Apparently, it still isn't 100% compliant, but it beats Internet Explorer 6. The downside is that it is still so embedded in the operating system that no matter how much Microsoft patches it, Internet Explorer will still be an unlocked window for hackers and malware to climb through. The only way they can really secure it is to detach it from Windows entirely and let it install just like every other browser. However, Microsoft doesn't work that way, and it isn't likely to change anytime soon. Until Microsoft makes a serious effort to remake Explorer into a product that can be called the browser of choice instead of the browser by default, Internet Explorer will likely to continue losing market share until, finally, the only share it has left is the place shared with its predecessor, a rival browser it all but vanquished from the web long ago and is now a browser in history. Netscape Navigator. And that's the news in the force field. I am very particular about what goes in the force field, and I only promote products and services that I either use myself or would use if I needed them. This week I would like to introduce you to a new sponsor who I've been using myself for reliable web hosting to keep the force field online 24/7. GoDaddy.com. GoDaddy's hosting plans are bigger and better than ever with 99% uptime, free 24/7 support, and no annual commitment. If you want to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com has what you need. .com names as low as $1.99, plus world-class hosting, fast and easy website builders, and much more. Here's the best part. As a listener of the Force Field, enter the code BLU101 when you check out, and save an additional 10% on your web hosting order. You want reliable web hosting at a great price? Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Some restrictions apply, so see site for details. That's GoDaddy.com. You're listening to The Force Field, and this is the part of the show I look forward to the most, as it is the opportunity to talk to my fellow professionals in the field. If you'd like to talk, you can call me at 407-CPU-JOY-8. That's 407-278-5698. Or through Skype at Savoya Computer. If you don't have Skype, simply go to the Force Field Podcast Episodes page at theforcefield.net and click the Skype icon located on the right sidebar. The download is free, the call is free, and the show is free. And you can't beat free. So call in and dare to enter the Force Field. In our last episode of The Force Field, we talked with Tony Mancuso, a lawyer who specializes in business formation and the author of LLC or Corporation, How to Choose the Right Form for Your Business. We learned about the various forms of businesses we can start, discussed the advantages and disadvantages of forming a business as a sole proprietorship and partnership, and discovered a form of business known as the Limited Liability Company, or LLC. Today we'll continue our discussion with Tony and learn more about the various forms of businesses. We'll discover the difference between limited liability companies and corporations, discuss the different types of corporations, and how you can find out which form of business is right for your company, as we conclude with part two of our two-part series on forming your business. And we're speaking to Tony Mancuso. Hi, Tony. Welcome back to The Force Field.
Hi.
Tony, in our last episode, we were talking about the different forms of businesses, including the sole proprietorship, the partnership, and the LLC. What are the other forms of corporations along with the LLC?
Okay, so an LLC is not a corporation. Now, it's commonly thought of as one because of its attribute of limited liability protection, but it isn't. So it's a separate entity, much more like a partnership, but a special kind of partnership. Yeah, that's how the law works. But, of course, you can have a one-owner LLC now in every state. That wasn't always true. So now they're even more different than partnerships. They're very much like sole proprietorships and partnerships, except they have that wrapper of limited liability protection. The corporation is a really different kind of legal entity, and it always has been. And the idea behind a corporation is that you no longer are the same legal entity as your business. If you're giving an example, if you're a one-owner LLC, the tax law says they disregard the LLC completely. They say you file a Schedule C like you're the sole owner. You're a sole proprietor still under tax law. With a co-owned LLC, the IRS says the same thing. They say, okay, you're a partnership. You file a partnership information return, but they don't consider you a separate entity. When you form a corporation, you're automatically a separate tax entity. It has a separate tax base. It has a separate tax rates. The money, it goes into the corporation, and you can only get it out in certain ways. You can't just, you no longer can have the flexibility to kind of handle the money. You always keep the funds separate in your business from your personal accounts. But with a corporation, you've really put a lot of distance legally and tax-wise between yourself and your business. It's a separate entity. And you have different roles in a corporation that are defined under law, under state law. You have directors that manage it. You have shareholders that have an investment stake in it. And you have employees. That's not true of the other businesses. In an LLC, for instance, even a co-owned one, an owner can't be an employee of their own business. You can't be. Under tax law, you can't be an employee. Under tax law in a corporation, by definition, if you work for your corporation, no matter what you do for it, you're an employee. So it has a lot of different aspects to it, a corporation. A lot of added layers that can make sense if you want a separate management layer. Then, you want a board of directors to manage it, separate from the people who fund it. You know, with your own business, generally, you're the one who's going to be funding it, and you're the one who's going to be running it. When you form a corporation, it really conceptually changes into a different entity. And even though you can put on your director hat or your shareholder hat, you definitely have to put on different hats. So it's a lot more complexity, and it's fine. You can have a one-person corporation in every state. where one person is the director, the sole director, the sole shareholder, and in most cases you can have hold all the officer positions that are required under state law. But it's more complicated. You will file a separate corporate income tax return. The money that you make in your corporation will be taxed at, the net income will be taxed at separate corporate tax rates. You can take that money out as dividends, which will be taxed to you as dividends, so they get double taxed in some cases. Or you can simply pay yourself a salary, in which case you avoid the double tax because a salary is a deductible employee expense of the corporation. So there's ways to get around double taxation in a corporation, but it's important to realize that you're dealing with a different structure that makes it more complicated in how money flows to you. In an LLC, in a partnership, in a sole proprietorship, everything you earn, and people don't always realize this, flows to you automatically and is taxed to you automatically at the end of the tax year, whether or not you take it out of your business.
Yeah.
Okay? That's something people don't get all the time. Like if you have a partnership and you make, you know, let's say you make $10,000 in profits, but you don't pay yourself. You don't you don't take a draw on those profits. You leave it in the business. You will be taxed on the $10,000 on your individual income tax return. It's allocated and taxed to you whether you take it out or not.
I see.
You see, there's no difference in the entity. It flows through. It's a flow through or pass through entity for tax purposes. A corporation isn't.
So the money that goes into the corporation is the corporation's, your money, whatever you're being paid or whatever you draw out of the corporation, that's a separate payment to you. That's not
it
really
is.
Your draw.
That's right, and there's separate rules that apply to that and separate tax rates that apply to that. So it's much more complicated. And again, it's a matter of you do a cost-benefit analysis. So along the way in your business, you may decide that a corporation makes sense. And the typical reason why that extra level of complexity makes sense is when you want to attract private investment capital. You want investors as shareholders, but you don't want them to manage, or perhaps you can put them on the board, but you don't want them to run the business and they're not employees. You want them to really stay in the shareholder category, separate from the people who manage and run the business. So that's a prime reason. Another one is that you start getting really much bigger and you want to kind of incentivize employees. So you want to have, stock equity sharing and equity sharing programs that are designed for corporations, stock bonus. And, you know, these were a lot more popular in the heyday of the 90s and the boom and all that, where you had a lot of IPOs and a lot of stock being given out. But it still applies, even in a privately held, closely held corporation. So I was just trying to say that, typically, the kind of migration that occurs during the life of business, the one that makes the most sense often is sole proprietorship or partnership, move on to an LLC when you need limited liability protection, and then finally, sometimes it makes sense to incorporate, to convert an LLC into a corporation. That often that's usually a tax-free event as well. But then you get the added benefit of these different management layers, the different layers within a corporation, these legal, and you separate yourself from your business. So the money made in your business stays there, and it comes out only at certain times to you. And while it's in your business, it can get taxed at lower corporate tax rates.
And as I understand it, corporations are easier to sell in the end when you're looking for an exit strategy than, say, a sole proprietorship or another form of business.
Only in the really large arenas is that really true, I think. With smaller, closely held businesses, I don't think it matters. People generally, you know, they're looking to buy your goodwill or sometimes your assets. It depends on what the sale is like or how it's structured. But the form of the entity normally doesn't matter too much. And it may be easier actually to sell an unincorporated business than an incorporated one. But you know, and with corporations, you have securities laws issues as well. It's just more complicated, and you definitely need an extra level of tax and legal help to form, operate, and to, you know, dissolve or sell one.
Now, there's a corporation, and then there's the subchapter S corporation. What's the difference between the two?
Okay, so subchapter S legally is the exact same as a regular corporation. The regular corporations, to distinguish them from S corporations, are called C corporations.
Yeah.
And an S-Corp basically used to make a lot of sense until the LLC came along. So I don't think there's a lot of benefit myself to S-Corporations any longer. LLCs give you the same pass-through taxation as an S-Corp. An S-Corporation is a tax election that says, I want to be taxed like a partnership.
Oh, okay.
So, okay? Pretty much all you get. And there's some advantage. It's kind of a trick that some people like to do. I don't think it's really worth it in most cases. You know, an S corporation, it was like a partnership where everything you make, it's allocated and taxed you at your individual tax rates rather than being held in the corporation. So what people tend to do sometimes as a trick or as a kind of, they think, a clever tax strategy, and it's promoted by some people. I don't think it's a great idea in those cases, but they lower their salary and have the money come out to them out of their corporation. And you know what they do? The reason for this is to save them Social Security, self-employment taxes. I don't think it's a great strategy. After all, why not pay into Social Security? You'll get the benefit of that hopefully later, right?
Yeah.
So
we hope so.
hopefully, right? So I think it's a short-sighted strategy and one that can get challenged by the IRS, so I don't think it's a great idea in many cases. But you'll hear people say in the formation kind of field, they'll say, S-corps are great to avoid self-employment tax. They tout that sometimes as the remaining characteristic of S-corps that distinguish it from all the others. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I don't think it's a great advantage or necessarily a good strategy. And the LLC, for most purposes, has supplanted the S-corp because it gives you the same thing with other benefits. There's some technical limitations to S-corporations on how you can handle losses. It's fairly complex, and your basis and your stock, and you need one class of voting stock, and certain types of entities cannot be shareholders in an S-corp. The LLC doesn't suffer from any of those limitations, so it's usually better. So now that the LLC has come along, the advantages of the S-corp are pretty much gone away.
Oh, okay. Is it generally expensive to form a corporation?
The filing fees tend to be kind of low, but, you know, it's just a lot more work and expense on an ongoing basis. If you get professional help, you can expect to pay more to handle them. The reality is partnership tax law is as complicated or more complicated than corporate tax law. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more definitiveness to the corporate tax rules. They've been around a long time. Partnerships and LLCs, co-owned LLCs, are very flexible, and they fall under the partnership tax regime, and it's very, very complicated. So there's really no difference in complexity between co-owned LLCs and partnerships and corporations. But nonetheless, you can always expect to pay a little more because for some reason, traditionally, they've always somehow come with a higher price tag.
Well, if I initially establish another form of business and I decide later I want to change it to another form, like I start off with as a sole proprietorship and I want to change it to a corporation, is it difficult to do, or do I need to just start all over?
You can, but dissolving a business and then reforming another one can have legal or tax complications. So you always want to get tax help, particularly when you do that kind of thing. And that's why I tried to make a point of mentioning the migration from one to the other in a certain direction is generally kind of simple, but other ways are not. So if you convert a corporation to an LLC, if you go in that direction, it's often fairly complicated.
Oh.
And there's tax consequences. The same with changing a partnership, dissolving and reforming partnerships, there can be tax consequences. So it's not always so easy to change the form. Legally, you can do it. It's not hard logistically. The paperwork sometimes isn't very complicated. But it can be more complicated in terms of the tax effects.
So really, in short, it's better to really decide what you want first, what form of business you want to start first, and then just do it right from the start.
I think so. And I think it always makes sense to get professional help by people who have advised small businesses, because there's a lot of traps for the unwary in this. There really are. I mean, you know, I've written books on how to do it, a lot of the simple stuff yourself, but the books have a lot of information about the kind of more complex areas you need help with. So when you make the decision to form one, it's really good to see where you're going and how you're going to get there and what different businesses you may migrate to along the way. The typical route, again, is like sole proprietorship, LLC, and then corporation if and when you need it. And that's kind of more typical.
I notice on the NOLO website, I saw a number of books written by you, and one that I noticed in particular was the one titled LLC or Corporation, How to Choose the Right Form for Your Business. And you have others out there as well. Is that a good book to start with when we're considering?
I think it provides a good and kind of, with a lot of examples, a good kind of explanation of if you're thinking about a limited liability entity, an LLC or corporation, which one's better and when should you go to which one and how do you go from one to the other?
Now, you have some other titles there as well. You want to give us a few of those?
Yeah, I mean, I have about a dozen books with Nolo, and a lot of them are on forming LLCs and operating them. So we have books on how to form an LLC in every state, how to form a corporation in every state, and then we have a corporate records book and an LLC operating manual. We also have books for nonprofits, how to form a nonprofit and get your 501c3 tax exemption. So those are the main categories of books that we have for people, you know, how to show them the nuts and bolts of what to do and what to think about when forming these entities and how to operate them smoothly.
Are they all pretty much do-it-yourself, or are they just a guide and it's still recommended to seek legal help on forming the business?
All my books recommend for all these kind of issues that we've raised legal help, legal and tax help, because the law and taxation for business entities can get complex. The main advantage of these books as a resource, I think, is letting you know what the issues are and how to think about them. The actual paperwork's pretty simple, and these days, most of it can be handled really quickly online by going to your Secretary of State's office if you want to form an LLC or a corporation. It asks for very basic information, so we tell them how to do that, but the actual process of doing it is incredibly simple. It takes a few minutes of your time. The books try and talk about why you'd want to do it and lead you up to the decision to help you reach it, and then what to do after you've done it. But the actual process itself, that's the least, that's the simplest part.
Does Nolo generally offer other products and resources and services to help entrepreneurs start their businesses?
They do. They have a service. They can help form your entity. I think Nolo has services that do that. My involvement is strictly with the books. Mm-hmm. I write the books that Nolo publishes, and they also provide PDF versions online. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. But Nolo itself has a much broader mission, and they also have a service business, I believe, to form entities, LLCs, and corporations for people that want to do that. They have loyal referral services that they host on their site, I believe. So there's a lot of services and a lot of resources they provide. They have free encyclopedia articles on a lot of things. But the books are there to help people have a more comprehensive introduction to and a kind of learning experience about these different areas.
So we want to read more about this. Where do we go to purchase the books?
Nolo.com, N-O-L-O.com.
Okay. And just to let our listeners know, the Force Field also has the books on the website available, to go to the Nolo website so you can read more about it and order the books if you'd like. They're available in the Force Field IT Business Resource Directory under Publications and Books. The LLC or Corporation, How to Choose the Right Form for Your Business, is also there. You can actually order right from that area as well. Well, Tony, thanks for joining us on the Force Field today and sharing your advice and insight in business formation. Before you go, can you give us the Nolo website one more time?
Yeah, it's www.nolo.com, N-O-L-O.com.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tony. I really appreciate it. We have been speaking with Tony Mancuso. I really appreciate your time today, Tony. Thanks a lot. And hopefully we'll get to talk to you sometime again soon.
Thank you. I enjoyed it, too. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Bye.
Well, folks, our time is up. I would like to thank everyone for listening, my kids for allowing me to do this without interruptions, and my wife for just putting up with me. If you would like to comment on the program, you can email me at rick@theforcefield.net or visit our website at www.theforcefield.net. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not represent The Force Field, Savoia Computer, or advertisers. All music on the show is original and was written and performed by Brother Rancid and the Brand New Pygmies. Our announcer is Felix DeCat. The show is produced and distributed by Savoia Computer. For The Force Field, I'm Rick Savoia. May the Force Field be with you.